Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, should I say chastened radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Gee Whiz We Love Grapefruit show.
No, we don't.
Rick, for legal purposes, we love grapefruit. We love the way...
You can't make me, you can't make me, you can't make me.
We love the way that the taste of grapefruit permeates that side of your salad bowl. We love the way that grapefruit interacts with other foods to make them grapefruit.
Do you know what I love about them? From a distance in Kroger, they look like oranges.
You think you're getting something good, and then up comes grapefruit. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and from the University of Kentucky to talk about how you can actually access and comment on our show, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. You know what else you can do there? That's where you can lodge your complaints. There's no need to take them directly to the provost. WMKY.org. There you will find a website for Health Matters. It's got all the recent shows listed. It's got a summary. It's got the audio in case you want to hear us over and over talking about your product. You certainly can go there and do that. After you've done listening to the show and you decide you want to interact with Facebook and say, for example, maybe comment about something we may have talked about that you agree or disagree with, go to facebook.com/HMRadioshow and there you will find a fan page where you can literally leave us feedback. Guess what? All of the people who like that get to see your feedback. So here's the beautiful thing. Tell us there so that all the listeners can be informed. Am I laying it on too thick, Tony?
We will explain this in a minute. Rick and I are a little steamed.
So all I'm saying is facebook.com/HMRadioshow is a great way to interact with the show.
Absolutely. Before we start, the sponsor for today's show is insurance benefits. These are some health insurance benefits you may not know about. Now, the Affordable Care Act did specify certain benefits from the Affordable Care Act, the exchange health insurances. As a matter of fact, any insurance that was not grandfathered in to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, now is required to offer these services. And they include vaccines for adults and children, screening for things like alcohol misuse, high blood pressure, depression, diabetes, hepatitis B or C, HIV, AIDS, and lung cancer. These are available to all adults who meet the screening criteria. Also, your insurance may pay for most health insurers have free online health coaching for weight management if your weight is causing or complicating other conditions. Nutritional counseling and weight loss programs may be available. Most major insurers offer discounted gym membership rates to many athletic club chains. Of course, that's hard to get in rural Kentucky, granted, but still, there are those options. If you have Medicare Advantage plan through a private insurer, your gym membership could be free. These may vary by insurer, but you also can get some help quitting tobacco. Most have resources to help you kick the habit. Some offer free over-the-counter aids, such as gum or patches, to help you quit smoking. Telehealth services, nurse hotlines, often free, and of course, those telemedicine video chats that we see advertised on TV, usually $50 cash or less, and you get a chance to talk with a doctor about your condition. And then finally, if you have a very expensive medical condition, a cost calculator can help you plan your budget for those, and that is available from your health insurer. So there are a lot of things that you can access due to the fact you have an Affordable Care Act insurance account or due to the fact that you are a Medicare beneficiary. Now, the thing about these, a lot of these health services you have or preventative services, this is not something that you can go in and you can say, oh, by the way, while I'm here, would you look at my knee? Can you please check this rash? Can you please listen to my lungs? I think I need an antibiotic, all those things. Many of these insurance plans and Medicare pays for a screening and health counseling session, but that's what these are for. If you have an illness, don't sign up for this. Your doctor will not be able to do this and take care of your condition. I've talked to several doctors who people come in for these health checks and then want additional services at that check, and that's not really the way it's set up. Sorry about that, but you can access some very good health services with your insurance. That's our sponsor, health insurance benefits that you may or may not have known about. Now, to the undertone of this show, which you see, we started off in somewhat of an aggressive manner, suggesting how you can give the show feedback. We have lots of avenues for that. The radio station is certainly has their feedback page. We've set up a separate feedback page where other listeners can comment on your feedback, can like it or dislike it, can add their comments as well. The reason we did this, a couple of shows ago, we had the provost of the university, our boss, a man, Dr. Tim Tracy, who rose from humble beginnings in southern Ohio, lots of family in eastern Kentucky, to become a pharmacist, then a research pharmacist, then a pharmacy administrator, and then the provost of the University of Kentucky. He is a very capable man, in our opinion, and we're not just saying that because he's our boss. We are very pleased to have him on UK administration, and we think that the university is going to be well served by having him there. That being said, I set up it was a softball thing. His research is on the enzyme cytochrome P450. This is one of the enzyme systems, and it has a lot of different enzymes in it that breaks down drugs and other products. And I set it up because grapefruit juice happens to interact with one of these subunits, something called CYP3A4, which is a subunit of the cytochrome P450. And this is in the small intestine and in the liver. The problem is the grapefruit juice can block this, and it can change the metabolism of medicines. Well, we and Dr. Tracy got a reply from the Florida Department of Citrus.
Yeah. But they could have used both the WMKY.org and Facebook
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always best just to go straight to the provost.
Absolutely. If you have a problem. Way. No, I'm not even going to be facetious about that, Rick.
Well, I am being extremely facetious.
I know, because this guy had nothing to do with that section of the show. But I'm going to let me read from there. First of all, I want you to understand the Florida Department of Citrus side of this, because I think it's rather important. I'm going to read a couple of things that, again, were made.
So let's get the legal obligations out of the way.
Yeah. These were these were made to both WMKY and to Dr. Tracy. And here's the statements. While it's important for people to be aware of potential interactions, we're concerned statements made in this segment do not reflect the current medical and scientific understanding of this topic. Our hope is to clear up confusion around this issue. And let me just say, there's no confusion on my part. I know where I stand on grapefruit juice. One, as everyone knows, I don't particularly like grapefruit, but that's okay. I'm not bringing in things that I do or don't like here as medical advice. The other thing I want to tell people, I'm not your doctor. Before you decide to stop, start, or alter your grapefruit intake or change your medical regimen, you should talk to your doctor. Those old radio shows where you had the know-it-all that told everybody what to do, they were bad for your health. They were bad for public health, and I want no part of that. But we want to bring some topics on this show that you might be interested in. Next paragraph from the Florida Department of Citrus. We know of no validated evidence that co-administration of grapefruit or its juice with a drug has caused a drug interaction resulting in actual harm to a patient's health. Medical literature on the topic shows the number of clinically relevant drug interactions with grapefruit is extremely limited, and for the majority of patients, avoidance of grapefruit is not necessary. Now, two things I'll say about that. One, I agree for the majority of patients, avoidance of grapefruit is not necessary. If you remember, if you are on a number of medicines, and you can pick the number, I usually think of people more on more than five medicines. At that point, there will be interactions between the medicines, and adding the grapefruit into those interactions becomes very difficult. Now, their first point, no validated evidence that co-administration has caused actual harm. No one presents to the emergency room saying, oh my gosh, I've overdosed on grapefruit juice. This simply doesn't happen. What they will say is, I have this symptom and they are found to have high levels of a drug. The response on the part of the treating physician may or may not be to ask about grapefruit juice, because again, this is something we don't think about routinely. Many times they will simply change the drug or lower the dose of the drug, not realizing that there was an interaction. So the fact that there are not oodles and scores of reports of grapefruit juice overdose does not in any way, I think, minimize the danger. We have real problems with drug overdoses and drug interactions, and adding in a food product to it, to me, is unnecessarily increasing your risk. Third paragraph. Additionally, we're concerned with the statement that 43 drugs have the possibility of interacting with grapefruit. Published studies indicate that clinically relevant interactions have been reported for 13 medications. Well, if that makes you feel better, that only 13 out of the 43 have known clinically relevant. I will tell you, if you go to the interaction checker on medscape.com, it's something called e-medicine, you've got seven drugs that are contraindicated to be used with grapefruit juice, including flibanserin, that new female sexual desire drug. And my goodness, you are not supposed to take that with grapefruit juice at all because of an interaction. There are 47 serious ones, including dextromethorphan, which is in cold syrup, oxycodone, and fentanyl pain medicines, and 138 you need to monitor closely, including Xanax, Plavix, Tegretol, estrogens, the new anticoagulant or blood thinner, dabigatran, and also the old one, warfarin or coumadin. Viagra is a significant significant, monitor closely interaction, according to eMedicine. And then finally, there are 60 minor interactions. So I'm being kind with 43 drugs. I'm looking here at close to 200 drugs that have some form of interaction. Now, again, their point is, clinically, have we shown that people's lives have been in danger because of these? No. But there is that possibility. And I'm telling you, I think it's very hard for a busy emergency room physician to pick up the fact that a person drank some grapefruit juice and yesterday, and that may be the reason that their blood pressure is low or they have some other problem.
Do you think drinking grapefruit juice will lower your blood pressure?
Right now, no.
Let me rephrase that. Do you drink grapefruit juice? Now you've got all the legal stuff corrected, right?
I'm okay.
You have righted all the wrongs.
Okay. Yeah.
So now let's talk about the wrongs. The other wrongs.
Well, I think one of the big things is, after all, if you think that Health Matters is going to have a measurable effect on grapefruit consumption in Eastern Kentucky.
Oh, boy.
I am.
You have missed the proverbial boat.
Yeah, because let's face it. I mean, we know that our show has a handful of listeners, and we appreciate both of you.
Apparently there's three now, because the two that I know don't like grapefruit.
There we go. So if you love grapefruit, and I've had a couple of friends of alert listeners who came up and said, you know, I'm sorry to hear that grapefruit juice. And I'll say again, I want you to understand, obviously, this is something that you should talk with your physician about your particular medical regimen. My concern is there are so many ways that medicine get changed. Let's say you're on one of those that doesn't interact. For instance, Crestor, the blood cholesterol medicine, doesn't interact with grapefruit juice, but Lipitor does. A pharmacy benefit manager can change those medicines. A pharmacist can consider them to be equivalent. A person can mistake one for the other and put you on those, and that could change the nature of the level of the drug and your response to it if you are a regular grapefruit user. So in my mind, it's not worth the risk because, frankly, I don't like grapefruit juice, but you have to make that decision. On the other hand, we are honored to be chastised by the Florida Department of Citrus.
Yeah, I mean, you got to ask yourself, who was listening to that? I mean, really, and if one of our listeners was passing it on in Florida, hey, you go. Good job.
You helped us with our first segment, and we certainly appreciate that.
I would go one step further and say, you know, there is an etiquette, right? There's an etiquette you follow. Tony, if you have a problem with me, I don't expect you to go straight to the producer. Or in this case, the university president.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they jumped right straight to the provost on this one. Were they trying to get our attention?
Yeah, I don't know. Frankly, you know, we would love to have a show.
There's two things the provost can't really do, and as much as I have all the admiration and respect for him, he can't lower my pay for this show. Okay? He can't do that.
The long arm of the provost.
And, well, there's a lot of things he can't do with this show.
But, right.
And make it better is one of them.
Well, unfortunately, you've been listening to the first fractional portion of Health Matters. Stay tuned in the second fractional portion. We're going to talk about how much kids love apples, for example. And we're going to continue to inform you or misinform you about serious medical topics. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillip.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Gee Whiz. We love the Grapefruit Show.
Oh, no, we don't. You can't make me. You can't make me.
Yes, this is our response to us. And so this is how people get in.
But still, though, it's amazing to me how this thing got its name. On a previous show, we discussed how grapefruits got their name. Because they're not like grapes. I mean, to some extent, they're not even much like fruit. They're most fruits sweet. They're sour. But because from a distance in the tree, they look like bunches of grapes.
Now, Gene Jones was on the show, and I mentioned to Gene about the grapefruits. And I said, you know, I don't like them. I like my fruit to be sweet. She said she really likes them. And I said, I bet you like Jolly Ranchers. And she said, yes, I like Jolly Ranchers, the sour green apple Jolly Ranchers. I don't understand why that's candy.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to get sugar, you should not have to put up with that to get the sugar.
I mean, right. I mean, if that's the case, right.
Yeah.
To some extent, I have the same feeling about key lime pie. Sorry, Florida. You know.
Oh, now I'm going to challenge you on
that. Well, key lime pie is tart. It's tart.
But it's is way sweeter than tart.
It is sweet. I'll give you that. But it has that tart like the Jolly Rancher.
Okay, Rick and I just broke at this point. I don't know if we can continue the show because my daughter marine research in Key Largo, and we went down and spent a week with her, and we went up and down the Florida Keys, and I tried all of the key lime pie at the Keys,
and none of the tartness bothered.
I had a couple of key lime pies since then, but I had key lime pie every night, and I was perfectly fine with that. That was a pretty nice trip. I'm not a big fan of Key West, but I'll take Key Largo.
See, now, I liked Key West. I thought the free range chickens were pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want a tattoo, and that pretty much put me out of the market in Key West.
Well, you could have went to the Hemingway House.
I looked at it.
You could have went to the southernmost point of the U.S.
Did that. Well, Eisenhower.
You should have been having a great time.
Oh, you could ride the conch train if you get there.
The conch train was great. Come on. It had three or four stops.
If a cruise ship hadn't pulled up, you can actually get a seat on the conch train.
You ended up at the Hog's Breath, didn't you? I know you. You were in the Hog's Breath.
At any rate, obviously we've been on the Keys. We like the key lime pie because it has some redeeming sweetness, which maybe we should have a grapefruit pie. Now, I might eat grapefruit pie.
No.
If you put enough sugar on a grapefruit, it's possible.
No way.
Okay.
No way. One of the things you don't see chocolate-covered grapefruit. You don't. You just don't see it. It's not something you see, right? You see strawberries, raspberries, blueberries,
you can put chocolate on
orange.
Peanuts. I know that didn't matter.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you can't put chocolate on it, it shouldn't be a fruit.
I like this. You know, all right, that's a show right there. We're going to delve more into the if you can't put chocolate on a show next week. But there it is. And again, according to the Florida Department of Citrus,
which we are happy you're listening.
Yeah, that's good. The number of clinically relevant drug interactions with grapefruit is extremely limited for the majority of patients. Avoidance of grapefruit is not necessary unless you count the clinically significant monitor closely interaction with Viagra. Other than that, I'm sure not a problem at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Next up.
Pomegranate. No, I don't know.
Why do American kids love apples? Oh, our sponsor. Our sponsor, before we talk about apples, our sponsor. Again, the health insurance benefits you probably didn't know about. Mentioning you are under Affordable Care Act insurances, you are allowed to visit for free, for no out-of-pocket expense, your doctor for screenings for things such as high blood pressure, depression, diabetes, hepatitis, for those who smoke, ages 55 and older, who've smoked for more than 30 years, lung cancer screening, weight loss programs, gym memberships, helping quitting tobacco, the telehealth services, but you're going to have to pay if you want to talk to the doctor on your tablet or your computer, and health cost calculators. There are and adults ages 50 to 75, colorectal cancer is covered. Now, this is tricky. This is my understanding. If you get a colonoscopy to screen for colorectal cancer and it is normal, then it is paid for as a screening colonoscopy. If they find a polyp in your colon, at that point, it's not screening anymore. They're going to take the polyp out and you will have to pay. This loophole is supposedly going to be closed in January 2016. Talk to your doctor or your colonoscopist about this before you get a screening colonoscopy for colon cancer this fall, and make sure that we are wrong if you are going to do that. But that is our understanding. They also will pay for type 2 diabetes screening for adults with high blood pressure, HIV screening for those with risk factors, administration of influenza, shingles, and tetanus shots, again, covered as a health maintenance. And here's one that's pretty good. Without any cost sharing for women, genetic counseling and evaluation for the BRCA, that's the breast cancer gene, if appropriate for women whose family history is associated with an increased risk of mutations, and they also pay for medications to reduce your risk of breast cancer if you are at high risk due to that. So a lot of different preventative measures. Keep in mind, these are separate from treatment visits. So if you're going to set up one of these screening or these preventative counseling visits, you've got to do that separate from your regular health care. But they are paid for first dollar if the doctor codes them appropriately and if you set up a screening visit. So that is our sponsor again, the insurance benefits that you may not know about. Back to kids and apples. This was the September 21st issue of the Journal Pediatrics. Apples account for 29% of all fruit consumed by kids. Two-thirds eaten as whole apples, one-third as apple juice. Toddlers aged 2 to 5 get 12% from apples. Children 6 to 11 get 22% from apples. Teenagers get 19% of their fruits from apples. If you look, 21% among Latino kids, 19.2% Asian American, 8.5% 10.2% white kids, 17.2% African American kids. People of all ethnicities and races love apples. They base this on the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. We call that the NHANES. 3,000 youth and their parents or guardians by the CDC. And this was the 2011-2012. They asked them to recall everything they ate and drank in the previous 24 hours, and they found a lot of apples. 12 items count for 86% of all fruit consumed by American kids. 18.9% from apples and 10.3% from apple juice, getting up to 29% of apples. Citrus juice, 14%. Other fruit juice, 9%. Bananas, 7%. Melons, 6%. Melons, one of my favorite. Citrus, 4.6%.
I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah, citrus, 0.3% better than berries. We are vindictive, aren't we? Peaches, 3.5%. Grapes, 2.8%. I thought grapes would be higher. I know a lot of kids that eat grapes. I guess the problem is grapes are so small when you look at, is a grape equal to an apple? I don't know that. I don't have the details of this survey.
Well, grapes, I mean, Mom always puts a bag of apple slices or grapes in the lunchbox, right?
So you think that grapes and apples would be equal in terms of a rebell or of a recall?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, fair enough. At any rate, people love apples. Apples, they...
You know why? Apples are part of caramel apples. They're part of fruit dip. A lot of people, you know, an apple is strong enough that you can kind of dip it in fruit dip.
Yeah.
Some of the other stuff is kind of flimsy and it's difficult. You can't dip a banana in a fruit dip.
The thing I like about apples is they're really portable.
Well, yeah.
Let's face it, melon is not portable. You can't just take a melon along with you and say, I think I'll eat this melon later.
Well, it requires a lot of preparation if
right.
You're going to do that. You have to actually cut it, cut it up, put it in bags, whatever. As to where an apple can really just be kind of...
Leave it in a bowl on the table. Pick it up when you want to. Apples are very convenient.
See, and to me, the banana is even somewhat messier than the apple because you got to figure out what to do with the peel.
Yep.
Right? And the apple core, okay. It's usually pretty easy to get rid of.
Yeah, but the banana
peel is...
You have to peel it before you eat it. The apple,
right.
You eat it, and then you just walk away.
Right.
But the banana, you got to do something with that peel before you eat it.
And then oranges, let's be honest. You got to peel the orange, and if it doesn't peel easily, then you're there with a mess, and you got...
And you get juice in your eye.
Absolutely.
That is annoying.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't like that.
To me, that's the same thing with a grapefruit. There's no easy way to eat a grapefruit.
Not that we're really jumping on grapefruit. We love grapefruit.
No,
gee whiz.
No, we don't.
But still, have its problems.
No, it's got lots of problems.
Yeah, it does.
It's got lots of problems. But.
On Rick, this we've got to talk about this because
what?
This is exciting. These are the 2015 Ig Nobel Prizes. Now, you know the Nobel Prizes. They have Nobel Prize of Physics, Chemistry, Mathematics, Economics, and so forth.
Haven't they given those out to folks lately that have kind of trivialized them?
The Nobel Prizes?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who's gotten them recently?
Bunch of scientists.
Really?
I will tell you the truth. I know more about professional baseball players, even though I don't like baseball, than I do about Nobel Prizes in physics. But there is their counterpart. This is research that first makes you laugh and then makes you think. And these are called the Ig Nobel Prizes. And I'll just give you an example of the sort of things that they do. The Ig Nobel Prize in physics was to a group in Taiwan and the United States that they tested the biological principle that nearly any mammal can empty their bladders in 21 seconds, plus or minus 13. Apparently, they mathematically and from video, they were able to figure out that no matter how big or small you are, apparently your musculature and the opening to your bladder allows you to empty in about 21 seconds. Literature prize to a group from the Netherlands and Australia for discovering that the word huh or its equivalent exists in every human's language and they're not sure why. That is, the article is huh a universal word, conversation infrastructure, and the convergent evolution of linguistic items. So if you don't understand what someone says, there is in every language an equivalent of the word huh.
Huh?
Yeah. Economics prize, Bangkok Metropolitan Police in Thailand offering to pay policemen extra cash if they refuse to take bribes.
Uh-oh.
Huh? But the one I wanted to talk about, the physiology prize, was awarded to two individuals, but I really want to talk about one of those individuals, a guy named Michael Smith, a man who, I've got to say, wins our Health Matters Hero of Today's Youth, his Health Matters Hottie, because he published an article, published April 3rd, 2014, about honeybee stings, and he did a honeybee sting pain index by body location. Now, here's his thinking. There is the Smith Index about how much a sting hurts you. And there is that thing called a bullet ant that apparently those stings make you wish you would die for several days. There is a difference between a wasp sting and a yellow jacket sting and a honeybee sting. As a matter of fact, the honeybee sting is used for a reference. So there is a difference among the insects. And Smith said, well, what about where the bee stings you? So he followed a protocol. He experimented on himself, followed a protocol where he would sting himself 5 times a day.
Did he really sting himself?
Or yes.
He let the thing sting him.
He put the thing on a different body part. Yes, what you are thinking is absolutely correct. He put it on different body parts and allowed honeybees to sting him. The first sting was always on his arm. That was the reference sting. Then he stung 3 different areas of his body, and then he came back and stung the arms again. And I'm going to read something from the methods of this paper Smith published. First of all, when you do research, there is something called an institutional review program, a human research protection program, and it's supposed to protect people from bad research. That is, you're not allowed to just go do experiments on people the way the Nazis did. That's not allowed anymore. But it does not have a policy regarding self-experimentation. So there was no review of this research. That is, if you want to do something stupid to yourself, you are...
Totally allowed.
Yeah, it is allowed. It's not unethical to do something stupid to yourself, although it is to do something stupid to someone else. And keep in mind,
What if I gave you a stupid idea and you carried it out?
Well, here's the thing, Rick. You know, we talked about those people who were buried in snow with only a breathing tube, and they had rectal and esophageal thermometers in place that made them feel like they're going to throw up into their breathing tube. It was terrifying research, and I'm not sure how that got by a review board. But the thing was, he did it to himself, so there wasn't a review. 25 sting locations throughout the body. The forearm was the internal standard. First and last sting were on the forearm. Stings were given a score of 5, and then there were 3 test stings that were either better than that or worse than that. Now, the test stings, he's got a map here. And in the male diaper area, there were 2 areas that he had stung on the male diaper area.
Oof.
He also was stung on both the palm and the back of his hand, the back of the knee, the calf, the arch of the foot, and his lip and his nostril. He was stung on those areas. And then he rated those compared to the forearm. The bee was pulled away after 5 seconds, leaving the stinger in the skin. The stinger was left for a minute and then removed with forceps. This is how he did it. Now, Rick, this has some practical application. Let's say that...
Now, otherwise, it wouldn't be on the show.
That's absolutely right. Let's say that you are running through the field naked and you run into a bee's nest.
Did you ever see the movie Tommy Boy? Just kidding. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but in a similar situation, what you have nothing but your 2 hands to cover your body. What should you cover with your 2 hands? What are the most serious stinging sites? This is what he figured out. I mean, where would you let them sting and where would you cover?
But don't you think human instinct is going to take over and you're going to choose modesty over pain threshold?
Perhaps. I will just tell you, the place you need to cover the most is actually your nostril. Apparently, that is a whole body experience when you get stung on the nostril. The mucus comes pouring out of the nose. It swells up, and he said you could feel it pretty much throughout your body. It was nasty. The sting. The next one you wouldn't be surprised at, the upper lip.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you rate the forearm as a 5, the nose was a 9, the upper lip was an 8.7. Coming in at 7.3 is the male diaper area. So actually the nose was worse than getting stung on the male diaper area. Now think about this. This guy has already been stung on the forearm. He's got 3 sites to experiment with, and he puts a honeybee, on the male diaper area and allows it to sting him. I am flabbergasted at this, and no wonder
he probably
I won a prize.
Grapefruit.
He is one strange guy. He does mention that skin thickness doesn't really matter. I thought the arch of the foot would be horrendous, and it was less than any of those.
Well, it's very thick, though. I mean, it's going to be difficult for them to sting you and it go deeper.
The tip of a middle toe was one of the safest places. Also, the forehead turns out to not be terribly sensitive. That is one of the best places, apparently, to get stung.
See, I would have thought possibly under your arm.
Actually, the upper arm is not painful. You're thinking underarm is painful?
I would think like under my arm would be a very painful place to get one.
Yeah. Well,
more than it'd be nagging and annoying.
Right. Now, the diaper area was a 7.3. The underarm, the armpit, was a 7.0. Again, with the forearm being a 5.
Right.
So it was not fun. I just don't think any of this was fun. But at any rate, he won the Ig Nobel Prize for stinging himself, and he stung over 25 body locations, 3 at a time, with a control sting on the arm before and after he started. I got to say, about in the middle of that, let's say you're a week in and you get up and you know you got to do 5 more stings today. You know, I think, first of all, I would get the diaper area out of the way as soon as possible. I'm not sure I could come to the diaper area late in this experiment with an open scientific mind.
Well, you couldn't come to it at the beginning of the thing with a sane mind. I mean, you know, how much money do they have to pay me to put a wasp in my diaper area?
Well, it was a honeybee. Let's not exaggerate, Rick. It was just a honeybee.
What does it matter? It flies. It stings.
You get one of those. I got to tell you, I just for comparison, I got one of those spiny caterpillars down in my gloves. I was trying to clear up a tree that had fallen this summer, and I got one of those down in my glove, and I had to stop work. That was a really, really nasty experience. I do not like those spiny caterpillars. I have decided. They are grapefruit to me. And I've still got a little bit of swelling, actually, on the wrist where that glove came in contact. But I threw the gloves away.
So you didn't, like, grab it and throw it in the diaper area and test and see how bad it felt?
I was thinking, yeah, let's just see how this works. Now I've got my control sting, and so I should go just test it. No, this guy is incredible.
You realize, though, why the guy had to test on himself, right? Because he couldn't get people to participate.
No. I think he knew from the start. And we actually, in all seriousness, medical science and science in general has a history of self-experimentation that's really remarkable. There's a guy named Werner Forssmann who actually put at the time, people thought you would die if you put a catheter in your heart. And so he actually got under a fluoroscopy machine, put the catheter in, advanced it to his heart, took the x-ray to prove it was there, and that started really heart catheterizations, the fact that he proved on himself that it was possible. And he wasn't going to ask anybody else to do it. It was really a remarkable piece of science. I think when people talk about Ig Nobels, your first thought is to laugh, but I think the courage of this guy to do this is remarkable. Either courageous or stupid or some combination, and sometimes there really is a combination of the two. Well, you are courageous and stupid because you have heard our second fractional portion. We're going to take a break now. We're going to recover from all of our various stings, both mental and physical, and come back with our third and final fractional portion. We're going to talk about soap, mouth guards, and possibly some cigarettes. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final. What is it, Tony? You're getting to all of us.
We're puckered. Let me just say, we love grapefruit.
This is one sour show. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weir. This is the We Love Grapefruit show. It's our salute to that noble Floridian fruit that has a wealth of drug interactions, in our opinion, although many of
more
them
more than we actually knew,
not yet proven to be clinically significant, but we have a sense as more Americans go on more prescription medicines that they will play a role. We are concerned about it. I will tell you, my advice is to avoid it if you are on multiple medications. Other people disagree, and this would be a good thing to talk about with your personal health care provider.
And you know, we've been kind of, you know, poking some fun at which is what we do. That's our MO. But it does bring to light the important point that maybe this particular time it's grapefruit, but when you're taking medicines, you should be in constant contact with your physician, and your physician should help you through that entire process to make sure that you fully understand the ramifications of the medicine you're taking and potential interactions with all kinds of things.
Right. This is not just about one particular type of fruit. Many medicines actually either they accelerate the metabolism of other drugs or they slow it down. And so they may drop the level to dangerously low levels when you need the drug. They may prolong the effects of the drug or enhance the effects of the drug. You have one set of enzymes that works on all these different drugs and some food products. And this is our concern. Talk to your healthcare provider about this, because as we take more and more pills, we are potentially creating some drug interactions that we don't know about. And as I said, I absolutely agree with the Florida Department of Citrus that the number of the validated evidence that co-administration of grapefruit and its juice with the drug has caused a drug interaction resulting in actual harm to a patient's health, that is a very difficult thing to prove. No one is going to come to the emergency room screaming they've taken too much grapefruit juice. This is something that has to be teased out. And again, with multiple medicines that have different actions on these enzymes, you don't need to make things more complicated in our opinion. Our sponsor for the final time, the health insurance benefits you probably didn't know about. This includes services such as recommended vaccines for adults and children, children. If it is a recommended vaccine, it is supposed to be covered under the Affordable Care Act insurance plans, and in most cases without a copay from you. Also, screening for alcohol, high blood pressure, depression, diabetes, hepatitis, and lung cancer in those who meet the criteria for those screening programs. Weight loss programs, free or discounted gym memberships, help in quitting tobacco, telehealth services, including the call a nurse or the telemedicine video chats, and health care cost calculators are among the advantages that you have due to the Affordable Care Act. It's at least worth talking to your doctor about. And one thing we would stress, again, talking with some of the doctors on the staff at St. Clair, when you come in for a screening visit, when you come in for a health maintenance visit, that's exactly what it is. It is not bleeding over into let's take care of your arthritis, let's talk about that cough and all those things. That would be a separate visit. Sorry about that, but if it becomes a treatment visit, then the screening, the doctor doesn't get paid for the screening and counseling. So if you really want the screening and counseling, set up a separate visit for this, talk to your healthcare provider, and make sure that you separate that from actual treatment of conditions you have. That's our sponsor, insurance benefits you may not know about. I want to talk a little bit about hearing problems. I said I want to talk a little bit. Okay, that wasn't funny. I apologize to all of our hearing impaired listeners.
Did you say something?
Yeah, thank you. This is the CDC, the National Center for Health Statistics. They released this on September 18th. A National Health Interview survey showed that 1 in 6 adults 18 or older, nearly 17% of all adults, which is, if you do the math, that's what it is, reports trouble hearing without a hearing aid. 5.5% ages 18 to 39, 9% of those ages 40 to 69, 43% older than 70. So this thing really hits home at 70.
What's the figure for married men over 38?
My wife has her opinion, and seriously, I mean, you know, this is true. We have had this conversation. I assume you have had this conversation as well.
Absolutely.
In all age groups, men were more likely than women to have had trouble hearing,
married
or so
men.
We understand. Among the 70 and older age set, 52% of men had trouble hearing without a hearing aid, 36% of women. Most adults who had trouble hearing had mild hearing loss, defined as a little bit of trouble hearing, 2/3 of them. 45% of women felt that getting older was the main reason. Now here's the difference I want you to understand. 45% of women felt getting older was the main reason, but only 24% of men. The men felt that the long-term exposure to noise was the main driver. So the woman says, yeah, I'm getting older. I guess my hearing's not as good. The men said, I'll tell you what's wrong. I will tell you what's wrong. That job I have, that thing that I do, that is...
Those concerts I go to.
Yeah, that is messing me up. It certainly has nothing to do with the fact that I'm getting older. At least that's what the men said. The American Speech Language Hearing Association recommends that adults be screened for hearing trouble at least every decade through age 50 and at 3-year intervals thereafter. I will tell you, you know, most of the time, unless you talk to me about it, I will, when I'm examining your ears, I'll often whisper a question in your ear to make sure that you can hear a whispered question. But I'm not doing a real detailed screen on my patients. Certainly every 10 years through age 50, I rarely screen for hearing loss in adults that come in their 20s and 30s. I just don't do that. But it is something that they do, again, 5% of people ages 18 to 39 have some trouble hearing. So I may need to do that. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about recreational noise. We know that those headsets, if you can hear what your child is hearing over their headset, they've got it cranked up too loud. It's just that simple. We've got to hear 65 decibels is really where things start to get serious. And that means that an alarm clock 2 feet away, average traffic is 85, a blow dryer 100, a power mower. Do you wear ear protection when you're mowing with your mower?
No.
I don't either. I do for weed eating. I do for chainsaw. I do not for the power mower. That's 105 decibels. A screaming child. Certainly, if you have a screaming child, you should wear earplugs. 110 decibels. More than a chainsaw.
That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, the screaming child doesn't have an off switch. The chainsaw does.
And the chainsaw will run out of gas.
Just pointing that... And the screaming child just makes more. It's a problem. Here's some hearing conservation tips. Walk away from loud noises. Again, here's the thing. If you're standing 3 feet away from someone and you can't hear what they're saying, that noise level could damage your hearing. 3 feet away, can't understand, can't hear what they're saying, that noise level could damage your hearing. Now, if you've already got damaged hearing, you may be perfectly quiet and you still can't hear, that's your problem. But in general, if you're 3 feet away, you can't hear, that's the problem. Walk away from loud noises, turn down the volume, don't stand directly near a source. I sometimes will cover my ear when an ambulance goes by, or at least go around the corner to talk. Wear earplugs at 85 or above. 85 or above would be the traffic noise we mentioned, certainly the lawnmower. Cross the street if you see someone operating a leaf blower, a weed eater, or a jackhammer. Turn turn down your car CD or MP3 player, wear earplugs at concerts, cover your ears with your hands when you're walking past a jackhammer. Good idea to keep earplugs handy in your purse, your backpack, your wallet, or your pocket if you're going to be around those loud noises. Now, another one that's got some recent attention is either riding in a convertible with a top down or riding a motorcycle associated with
neither of which you have much experience in.
No, this is not going to be my problem.
Which one have you done less of?
I've done zero of both. I think I did ride in a convertible once.
Were you in the local parade?
No. This was actually, we test drove.
You didn't get to sit up and have people throw candy? Or no, that'd be you throwing candy to them.
Right, and I would not. If I threw candy, I'd throw Jolly Ranchers because it's worthless. I would want to get rid of it as quick as possible.
Oh,
now,
wait
a second.
Oh, wait. We probably shouldn't throw grapefruits.
Throwing grapefruits, that is not going to make you, that's not going to help the parade out.
There'll be other interactions that happen because of
that's
that.
Right. So if I want to throw, don't we stray quickly. The point is actually, I test drove a convertible. I rode a dirt bike a couple of times in high school. That was it. So you've been on a motorcycle quite a bit.
Yeah, not quite a bit, but I've been on a few times when I was in high school and a few times with friends. I'm a big guy. People don't usually let you go on the motorcycle with them anymore. And I don't have a license, so no, I don't spend much time on them. But now I have on occasion ridden in convertibles. I've owned a convertible.
Ah.
So, and it was not a convertible, like, high-performance car. It was a Sunfire, a Pontiac Sunfire. But no, it was nice.
Were you aware of the noise in the convertible?
Yeah, you would usually just roll the windows up, and that would keep the air, and you know, you could keep the noise down, believe it or not, by just rolling up the windows, which looks kind of silly when you see somebody driving a convertible with their windows up. It looks kind of silly, but it kind of keeps the heat and cool in and cuts down on the noise.
There you go. So at any rate, common condition, and earbuds and earphones are going to be a big problem for the next generation, for our generation, motorcycles, power equipment, lawn equipment, and so forth is going to be a big problem for us. And the rates as you get into your 70s approach 50% for men. Next up, soap.
I like it.
Soap.
I use it.
Yeah. This was a study published in the Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy back on September 16th. This was researchers at Korea University, and you never know about Korean research. I'm sorry, that sounds biased, but I'm just not sure about this. But this looks actually pretty good. They took two soaps. One was just soap. It had no antibacterial action whatsoever. They had another one, which had the antibacterial and antifungal agent called triclosan, and that's something that is very concerning. Triclosan has some adverse effects. It builds up in the environment. People are not fond of that particular chemical, but it is in a lot of the antibacterial soaps. They did two tests, and this is fair enough. They looked at 20 common dangerous bacterial strains in a lab setting. They put the soap on, and it turned out regular soap killed those germs almost as fast as the soap with the antibacterial agent. Then they took 16 healthy participants, had them dip their hands in a solution of bacteria. Then they washed their hands in either bacterial soap or regular soap, and it turns out there was no significant difference between the bacterial soap and the regular soap. So, you know, a lot of times I wonder about this. I think, well, I've been doing something really dirty. Maybe I should use an antibacterial soap. It turns out, as best I can tell, it does not make you healthier to use an antibacterial soap, and some of those antibacterial agents, in fact, may be, in the long run, hazardous to your health. So the word from Health Matters, the best information we have right now from the soap industry is that any soap, if you wash your hands for 20 seconds or more, that's usually two verses of Happy Birthday. Happy Birthday, by the way, my wife says, no longer copyrighted. You can sing it without paying royalties now. So what could be easier? Soap up your hands, scrub, making sure you get the back of your thumbs and in between your fingers for 20 seconds, two verses of Happy Birthday, rinse it off, and it doesn't matter whether it's antibacterial or not. You're going to get about the same amount of germ killing and germ removal either way.
You know, I can only imagine you going into the local restaurant, then deciding to launch into your hand washing routine where you're actually singing out loud your two times of Happy Birthday.
I hum it.
People are going to think you're
it.
Crazy.
No, I hum it. I hum it to myself.
People think you're crazy.
I take my time. I'm not really peppy on this.
What
this
tempo do you use?
It's a big band. It's kind of a big band swing kind of feel. This is the way I think Frank Sinatra would sing Happy Birthday.
So do you do it 10 times when you brush your teeth?
No. I've got an electronic toothbrush, which I, unlike you, pay attention to. It beeps when it's time to move on.
So why can't we get something for
hand beeper?
Why can't we get something with a little soap dispenser? When you dispense the soap, a little light flashes for 20 seconds.
I like it. I do.
I think we could be billionaires on that, Tony.
I like it. Well, now that that Happy Birthday is back on the market, we could get a soap dispenser that plays Happy Birthday.
Well, that's two. Twice.
Yeah.
If you're, if it's your birthday, three times. Or yeah, maybe just one time if it's your birthday.
Now, let me say to our Health Matters listeners, if you develop this, we expect at least to be mentioned in the patent application. We're just saying we throw out these ideas. We don't have time to develop this, but our genius then spreads throughout the community.
Absolutely. It's going to make its way all the way to Florida on this one.
Next up, how to get those nasty citrus stains off your hands.
Oh, we're terrible.
No, actually, next up, now this is still theoretical, but I thought it fits to some of the other things that we're doing here at Health Matters. I just wanted to let you know. Researchers, University of California, San Diego, demonstrated a mouth guard with electronic sensors can detect concentrations of chemicals in the saliva. They're thinking this could be great for soldiers, pilots, athletes, maybe hospital patients, if you want to wear a mouth guard while you're in the hospital. They measured the concentration of uric acid. Uric acid is the stuff that makes gout, which is a very painful arthritis, and they could monitor your uric acid concentration by monitoring your saliva continuously. And like all these things now, we can shoot it over to your smartphone using a low-level transmission. And they did actually something that consumes less power than classic Bluetooth. They use something called Bluetooth Low Energy. This has never been tested in humans. That what they've done is they've said, all right, if we bathe this thing in a saliva-like concentration of uric acid, it will pick it up and it will send it to the phone. The first time they looked at, they also tested not only for the uric acid, which is the gout chemical, but also lactate. And lactate builds up when you exercise. So if you're running and you have this mouth guard, the theory is that you could measure your lactate levels and you could say, oh, I'm really, at this point, I'm about to poop out. I don't think I can continue producing this much lactate. I've got to back off on my exercise regimen. The point is, Rick, and we've talked about this, the first generation of fitness monitors really was about monitoring your pulse, monitoring your
steps.
Yeah, the number of steps you take, some generic things that everybody might be involved with. Now we're starting to see where you can monitor your glucose continuously, send yourself an alert if your glucose went low, monitor the chemicals in your saliva. As we get better sensors, eventually I think we are going to have these personal health monitors. Many of us who have diabetes and other medical conditions such as high blood pressure, they will be an essential part of our treatment. For the rest of us, they may be a novelty, but in certain circumstances, having the ability to attach sensors and feed them back to a separate device using Bluetooth or some other transmission is going to be important. So this is another one. But again, I think eventually you will be connected to your pacemaker, to your glucose, your embedded glucose monitor. I believe also you may be able to give yourself an extra dose of some medicine with an embedded reservoir that you can control with your smartphone. Kind of exciting stuff. As always, as we mentioned before the show starts, anything that is transmissible is hackable.
Absolutely.
So you always got to worry about that.
You got to be careful about that stuff. Take security, you know, seriously.
I got one final thing.
Okay.
Can I do my one final thing?
Is it about grapefruits?
No. FDA banned sales of four RJR cigarette brands because they failed a substantial equivalence test. These four cigarettes are Camel Crush Bold, Pall Mall Deep Set Recess Filter, Pall Mall Deep Set Recess Filter Menthol, and Vantage Tech 13. And if you're smoking Vantage Tech 13, we're sorry. The FDA says they should not be marketed. The FDA says we don't approve cigarettes, but we do issue marketing. But one of the problems with the Camel Crush Bold, they had a menthol capsule actually in the filter, and so apparently this thing would just flood you with menthol. They said these things are so much different from cigarettes, and this is the shameful thing. You know, these things are so bad, Rick, that even they're not even allowed to be cigarettes. Okay. That's bottom of the barrel. Speaking of bottom of the barrel, can you get us off the air, please?
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilby, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
first, we know of no validated evidence that Health Matters caused a drug interaction resulting in actual harm to a patient's health. Medical literature on the topic shows that the number of clinically relevant drug interactions with Health Matters is extremely limited, and for the majority of patients, avoidance of our show is not necessary.
Now, additionally, we're concerned with the statement that 43 drugs have a possibility of interacting with Health Matters. Published studies indicate that clinically relevant interactions have only been reported for 13.
Further, just to be picky, the interaction between Health Matters and some drugs occur primarily in the small intestine. Not not in the liver, as the segment suggested.
Lastly, the cholesterol-lowering drugs Pravacol, Lescol, and Crestor are considered safe to consume while listening to Health Matters. While this may sound like a fine point, it affects millions of people taking heart medicines.
Health Matters is committed to educating patients and health professionals on the facts about radio show interactions by working with the leading experts on the subject, including several people who have scientific degrees.
Below are important points from our research to consider if our listeners want to comment on this complicated topic in the future.
While some prescription medications may interact with Health Matters, most do not.
For patients who are prescribed medication that may interact with Health Matters and wish to continue to listen to our show, their physicians often can prescribe non-interacting alternative medications. These medications often can provide the same therapeutic effect with no need to avoid the show.
It is safe to listen to Health Matters while taking virtually all over-the-counter medications.
Whatever you do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our enthusiastic review of The Joy of Kale on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.